this morning. In terms of our agenda, we are going to start with South African citizenship, which the state law advisor is going to take us through, will lead us on that one, just to check if amendments by the portfolio committee were captured properly. The second item will be consideration of the Births and Deaths Amendment Bill proposal from the National Council of Provinces, followed by a Refugees Amendment Bill, and the last will be Immigration Amendment Bill. At this juncture, we'll give to the State Law Advisor to take us through. Over to State Law Advisor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam, I was speaking to two bills. It's Bill 17C and Bill 17D. You will remember that the committee agreed to reject Clause 6 of Bill 17B and then to insert a new clause. And Bill 17C, on page 2, you will see that Clause 6, the clause is rejected, and then the new clause, that the following be a new clause, amendment of Section 6 of Act 88 of 1995. Section 6 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the addition of the following subsection. 3, any person who obtained South African citizenship by naturalization in terms of the actual fees to be a South African citizen, if he or she engages under the flag of another country, in a war that the Republic does not support. And if you look at Bill 17D, on page 6, from line 35, the lines on the right-hand side from line 35, the rejection is reflected there, and the new clause, by inserting the new clause as I've just read. So everything, as the committee agreed to, is in both 17C and 17D.
Thank you, State Law Advisor. I'm sure we are all in agreement, because the problem we had, it was the content then of the clause, but it has been simplified for every one of us to understand. Honorable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I am compelled to just state exactly what happened. This change did not come from the committee. This went through the committee as it was. When it was presented in the House and we debated it in the House, the minister had then been saying that this section only applies to naturalized citizens. The wording did not reflect that. We, amid much heckling, accused the minister of having misled the House. I met with the minister last week. The minister admitted to me that she realized, after us having said that, she went back to the bill, had a look, realized that what she had said differed from the wording in the bill, and the wording was subsequently changed. It didn't come from this committee. I do want to just note, Chair, and I won't argue it here necessarily. It will go to Parliament on Thursday afternoon, that we certainly will be making a declaration on this. We believe it to be unconstitutional. We have received legal advice, substantial legal advice on this. We believe this to be unconstitutional to render people stateless. It is in conflict with a number of sections of the Constitution, Sections 20, Section 33, Sections 198B, and we believe this, as I say, to be absolutely unconstitutional. There is no need for this to be in here. And we will certainly be declaring that on Thursday. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Lovemore, you are right. Yes, it's a mistake on my side. These are actually amended proposals from the NCOP. I'm not sure if there's anybody else, maybe from the floor who would like to brief on this matter, because I think the matter has been clarified. It's clear now. If there are no hands, then we take the matter as written in the bill as carried, because we voted on the bill last time. So we are continuing with our next item. Thank you, State Law Advisor. Second item will be with regard to birth and death registration amendment bill. Just to bring members who were not in on Friday that the matter was dealt with on Friday in the portfolio committee. We were dealing with also a proposed amendment from the National Council of Provinces with regard to the removal of facial patterns from the bill. We voted on the bill, but in fact, the majority voted for the rejection of the amendment from the NCOP. After consideration, we felt that the amendment was proper and will be in line with the Refugees Amendment Bill, that we remove facial patterns from the bill. Are we together, honorable members, that we are agreeing that we remove facial patterns so that the bill is in line with the Refugee Amendment Bill? I'm talking about the Birth and Death Registration Amendment Bill, that an amendment that was proposed by the National Council of Provinces that we should remove facial patterns. So we are in supportive of the amendments from the NCOP that we remove facial patterns. And we will then sign the report that will be submitted to Parliament. We will for now not vote on the acceptance of the bill because we don't form a quorum. We are running short of one member. We will flag it for now, and maybe at the end then we will vote on the acceptance of the amendment from the NCOP. Is that in order, honorable members? Thank you. Oh, yeah. The following is deliberations on and voting on the Refugees Amendment Bill. The department will take us through, because we will be voting today on the amendment bill. And before we give to the department, I think we need to give to Honorable Lovemore, who has submitted some proposals. Over to you, Honorable Lovemore, to take us through your submission.
Thank you very much, Chair. The comments that I've submitted are based entirely on the submissions that were made, and in most cases they were contained in more than one submission. I have also, just to be absolutely transparent with you, I put them together. I then have run them by the Legal Resources Centre here in Cape Town, the WITS Law Clinic, the NMMU Law Clinic, and the WITS UCT Law Clinic and the WITS Forced Migration Studies Program. They have agreed with what I have put here, so I will just go through them. The first is clause 1B, and that is the definition of a dependent. The change involves making or providing a closed list to be dependent. It doesn't provide for any exceptional circumstances. If somebody does not, for instance, declare that he or she has a child back home that might later join them, they could certainly face problems. There might be other dependent family, etc. We simply do not see the requirement for a closed list, and propose therefore that we go back to the original wording of the Act, which is includes rather than means. As soon as you change it to the word means, you close the list of possible dependents. So the proposal is to go back to includes. Chair, clause 2B deals with the issue of somebody having committed a crime in another country and seeking refuge in South Africa, something that we've discussed at length in the committee. And we surely, Chair, must be in line with the international instruments of human rights protection that we are party to. I've just referred to two of them here. The one is the United Nations Convention and Protocol relating to the status of refugees. The other is the OAU Convention governing the specific aspects of refugee problems in Africa. We are signatories to both. Both of those, Chair, under the sections that define the term refugee, say that a person will not be considered to be a refugee in a country if he has committed a serious non-political crime outside the country of refuge prior to his admission to that country as a refugee. Now, those were the wordings, that was the wording that was in the previous Act. There does not appear any reason to change that. We are proposing, or it is proposed, that we change that quite substantially, where we say that it would be punishable, a crime would be punishable by imprisonment in South Africa without the option of a fine, etc. If we are signatories to these international instruments, as we are, why not simply be in line with them as we have been? Why change that? So the proposal is to retain the wording of the 2008 Act. Chair, over the page, clause 4 deals with who can be a member of the Refugee Appeals Authority, and the proposal in the amendment bill is that a political office bearer indeed can be a member. It has been argued by the department that this person will not bring a political agenda. I would beg to differ, that every political office bearer has a political agenda. And as I've written here, there is no cogent reason for the inclusion of a political office bearer, especially if we have, and we hope we will have, within the next few years, a comprehensive migration policy in place and the appeals authority is sufficiently capacitated. There's simply no cogent reason for the inclusion of a political office bearer, and that should be deleted. So we should retain the wording of the Refugees Amendment Act then of 2008. Chair, the clause 5 deals with the registration of birth of children of asylum seekers or refugees. It is required that in the amendment that the births be registered within 1 month of the birth. Now, this is a requirement of South Africans, and we fully accept that. However, there are no repercussions if South Africans don't comply. They simply go through a late registration of births process. For an asylum seeker or a refugee, however, and particularly an asylum seeker who has dependents, it could be that if that child is not registered within a month, there could be serious repercussions, because that child could then not be recognized as a dependent, because that person has then not complied with the law. So there could be serious repercussions for an asylum seeker particularly. And we recommend, as did a number of institutions who made submissions, that time period be extended to 3 months. Also, of course, that it be widely made known, but that is not something that is legislated. Chair, Clause 6F again, we've discussed this at length, and this deals with the rejection of what are considered to be manifestly unfounded applications and the lack of any appeal or review mechanism. Now, the department has said, and I think it was last week, in fact, in our committee meetings, that declaring an application as manifestly unfounded, it's obvious that it's manifestly unfounded. It is not so obvious, Chair. If I have been repeatedly raped and persecuted in my country as a woman, I don't think I'd tell you so easily. I speak a different language from you. There probably isn't an interpreter who can speak my language. You ask me why I'm in this country. I say I'm looking for a better life. That application is manifestly unfounded. It is not in terms of the Refugees Act. It is manifestly unfounded, and then I really would challenge you to tell me that it's now obvious that it's manifestly unfounded. It's not obvious. Allow the people to appeal. Allow them to appeal. So what we are suggesting, in the Act, it says that the Director General must review those decisions, manifestly unfounded, and that's fine. But then it gives, the Act provides a whole list of what the Director General may do in reviewing those decisions. The suggestion is that the word may be changed to must. So before reaching a decision, the Director General must request any person who is in a position to do so, including the asylum seeker in question, to provide him or her with information relevant to the matter being dealt with. It must not be at the discretion of the Director General. This is in conflict, certainly, with the Constitution, in conflict with the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. It is in conflict with due process of law. It is in conflict with the principles of natural justice. And it is certainly something that must be changed. Chair, over the page on page 3, you will see that I've quoted from the United Nations Convention, which says the expulsion of a refugee shall only be in pursuance of a decision reached in accordance with due process of law. We are again not complying with the international instrument to which we are a signatory. Chair, the second but last is the permanent residence issue, where currently what is allowed for in the Amendment Act is that an asylum seeker applies for asylum. Once they have been granted asylum, they become a refugee. They become a refugee. They then have to go through the process of being declared a refugee indefinitely, and they then go through the process applying for permanent residence should they wish to. The Act, or the Amendment Bill, proposes that they will have had to be in the country for 5 years subsequent to them having been granted refugee status. Now, Chair, it is important to realize two things. The one is that person, if they are a genuine refugee, and I'm not talking now about economic migrants or people who are taking a chance, but if they are a genuine refugee, was a refugee from the day they entered the country, not from the day they were issued with a piece of paper, from the day that they entered the country, and we have to recognize that. Secondly, the department has said on numerous occasions that we cannot legislate for inefficiencies. The process from application for asylum to declaration as a refugee is taking at the moment 5 to 7 years. Now, I understand that that this act or amendment is certainly hoping to address that, and I certainly hope that it will. But these are practicalities that we have to realize. At the moment, what we say to a refugee is that you must be in this country for 12 years, 10 to 12 years before you can apply for permanent residence. Now, when we raised this in the last committee meeting, I think it was the said law advisor who said that it is international best practice. I have, and I'm open to correction here, I have researched this, and I've also spoken to a number of lawyers, and based on the research that I've done, it is not international best practice. Even declaring a refugee, somebody a refugee indefinitely is not international best practice. The recommendation, therefore, goes back to what was contained in many submissions, is that a person can apply for permanent residence after 5 years of continuous residence in the Republic from the date on which he or she applied for asylum. And then, Chair, on page 4, this is just a recommendation, and in fact goes back to the Refugees Amendment Act of 2008, which has not yet commenced, which scraps the Standing Committee for Refugees. The Standing Committee for Refugees has turned out to be rather a rubber stamp and hasn't necessarily operated efficiently. But if it, in an ideal world, if it were properly capacitated, if it were independent, etc., it could provide, and it is supposed to provide, oversight of the operations of refugee reception centres, independent, efficient and competent review of decisions which are made by status determination officers and in the future committees, and also a source of interpretation on matters of law. For instance, the burden of proof. What is the burden of proof on an asylum seeker? We're taking that away and we are putting nothing in its place. Nothing. So serious consideration must be given to developing and equipping a similar but efficient, independent oversight body. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Lovemore. I think I'll give the department to brief on the matters raised by Honourable Lovemore. Not sure it's Advocate Sliby Mecha or Advocate Erasmus is going to lead us in.
Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members.
Thank you, DC.
Chair, we are really saying we're receiving this thing now for the first time. And now we don't want to give half-baked responses because we didn't get it and then we can look at it thoroughly. More especially when the Honourable Member even saying the state law advisor said this is an international law practice and he has made the research. It is not. I think we need to really do our research to respond to that. Otherwise, we're going to give half-baked responses on this. So that's the war now which we're having. So we don't know what time can be given to us in order to go and look at this and to respond.
I'm afraid we've been deliberating on this matter, I don't know for how many weeks now. And the same matter that the Honourable is raising were discussed, were debated, and I think today we are going to vote on the matter.
Maybe 10 minutes can be enough for us.
Okay, we'll afford you 10 minutes. In the meantime, Honourable Members, can we then deal with the issue of the South African citizenship? Okay.
Chair, yes, you are absolutely right. We have been deliberating on this for quite some time, and we did say last week that we were grateful to the department for certainly hearing some of the things that we and the 14 bodies that made submissions had said, and amending the bill subsequently. And a good example of that is the inclusion of the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, which was not in the amendment bill, but has subsequently been put back as a result of submissions. However, there were a number of concerns raised, and these are the ones that I'm bringing to you today, that were not addressed by the department. And those, the amendments that were made by the department only came to us last week, so quite clearly there has been a short time in which to respond. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Lovemore, I think not everything that we want included in the bill will be included. Some will be left out. Yeah, yes, you're right. Others will be included, others won't be included, because these matters were deliberated upon for quite some time. The department also responded, and yes, others will be included, others won't be included. Can I give the state law advisor?
Yeah, I just want to clarify something. A statement has been said that the spiritual advisor has stated that it is international basic practice for that clause. No, that is not true. What I said was, I was dealing with the interpretation of the section itself. What was the intention? What was the intention of the legislature when they enacted that law? What was the reason behind this act, behind this section? And then I said, the intention from my interpretation was to ensure that the refugees, they remain in the country continuously for a period of 5 years. They mustn't be here and then next they go to another. They must remain in the country continuously in order for them to be entitled for permanent residence. That was the reason. I was just dealing with the interpretation of the section itself to say perhaps the reason behind this section was to do this and that.
Honorable Tibedi?
Well, Chair, thanks. Given that the matter has been discussed for quite some time, I agree with your proposal, or your decision rather, to allow the department 10 minutes to reflect on the issues and come back so that we can engage on the issues and bring this matter to finality so that at least we can move. It's not helpful to sit in meetings and discuss one of the same thing 1,000 times. It's not helpful because it's not going to change the facts. The facts will remain. So I think the submissions that we've made, let the department go and look into the submissions, come back, give us a report, and we move.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We are in agreement that we, in the meantime, deal with the BEPS and DES amendment bill, the one that we flagged for us to have a quorum. We have a quorum now. If we could move and second the proposal from the NCOP that we support their proposal that the facial patterns be removed from the amendment bill. Could I get a mover and a seconder? Honorable Matebe is moving. Honorable Lovemore seconding. Can we then adjourn for 5 minutes to give the department a bit of time to go through the comments by Honorable Lovemore? Talk to Honorable Chibit. The report reads as thus. Mayor Balindlela, could take your seat, please. The Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, having considered the subject of the Birth and Death Registration Amendment Bill, B18B of 2010 National Assembly, Sectional 75, and proposed amendments of the National Council of Provinces, announcements and tablings and committee reports of the 3rd November 2010, referred to it, reports the bill with amendments, B18 of 2010. Thank you, Honourable Member. You are ready. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, the Honourable Members, for giving us the opportunity just to consolidate the response so that we know what we are responding to. CS will be taking us through each and every clause in terms of the response, and if it is necessary, maybe we will add at the end, but we won't give each and every amendment. So it's going to take us through.
Thank you, DJ, and thanks, Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'll be dealing with all the questions, and my colleagues will add on other issues that I may miss the point. Looking at the proposal number one that deals with the definition of dependent, yes, we want to say by removing the words includes, we are aware that we are limiting using the means because we are now going to be listing, but what we are saying is we would like to determine which are persons who are going to qualify as dependents, and with the definition we are looking at immediate family, and looking further add the word destitute, it allows us to add more people underneath that definition itself. So we would not be necessarily agreeing to the proposal as is currently. Then going to the second clause that deals with the retention of the current wording of 2008. What we'd like to emphasize is that initially we had discussions on this one wherein a question was raised in terms of what will be a serious non-political crime. Then we've gone back to deliberate and added the words to qualify that that crime will be a crime that a person will be sentenced without an option of a fine. So the emphasis is more on the words seriousness of the crime. Then moving further to the third proposal, which deals with amending section 8E, we're saying the word political office bearer has been qualified, and the proposal that is being made here does not take into account that in the last proposal that we have made, we have qualified this wording by saying a person who is a political office bearer should not be holding a position in the National Executive Committee of any political party. So that goes beyond in explaining who this political office bearer should be at what level. Then going to the next proposal regarding the registration of death or death of children of asylum seekers and refugees, what we are saying is the main legislation that deals with the registration of death is the Birth and Death Registration Act, and Section 2 thereof says the Act applies to all South African citizens in or outside the Republic, and it applies also to persons who are not South Africans who are in the Republic. Therefore, registration that is applicable to, as mentioned by the Honourable Member, to South Africans is applicable to non-South Africans, and furthermore, any other provision in the Birth and Death Registration Act will apply to non-South African citizens, including the late registration of birth. The only difference is that a child born of an asylum seeker or refugee would not be regarded as a South African. They are registered on a separate register for the purpose of issuing the unabridged birth certificate that is doesn't have an ID number. The next amendment or proposal that is being made is with regard to Clause 6F, amending Section 24A, that says an asylum seeker who's this deals with manifestly unfounded applications of fraudulent. And what we are saying, just a little bit before I get to, just to give a bit of explanation, is that the automatic review says if your application, which manifestly unfounded, fraudulent or abusive, says clearly it is not based on any reason that is provided for in Section 3 of the Act, therefore it falls outside the ambit of the Act. The automatic review, what comes in to do is all decisions that are decided as manifestly unfounded will go to the Director General. Currently, they go to the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs, which DG, when DG will be looking at them, will be applying the same principles and procedures that are applied by the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs. And furthermore, I'm saying when a person, the use of the word must is not necessarily what we'll agree to, in that if we use the word must, it means all cases, even those that are clearly out of line in terms of what the Act says, within the manifestly unfounded cases, you have to look and you have to call a person and say, come, give me the reasons. Then that deals with the issue of the issue of time frames in terms of fast-tracking this, because there are purely cases that do not qualify under the Act. Therefore, using a discretionary may allow DG to evaluate the cases, and on those cases that there is some question regarding the procedure that follows, whether that confirms what the Act says or not, or doesn't say, it doesn't fall within the Act, sorry, then DG will be dealing with that speedily and adequately. However, what we also want to mention is that PAJA, as mentioned by the Honourable Member, will still apply to these particular cases, in that a person who has been rejected as manifestly unfounded, confirmed by automatic review as manifestly unfounded, still has an opportunity to go for judicial review. And that is currently happening. There are people who go for judicial review after manifestly being found and confirmed to be manifestly unfounded. Going further to the next proposal on page 3. It deals with amending section 9, clause 9, sorry, amending section 27C relating to the issue of permanent residence. We are saying, we are still, I think we argued on this last week, and we are still standing by our arguments that we do not necessarily would like to say a person who has been, for example, in the country for a period mentioned by the Honorable Emma should automatically be given permanent residence, looking at the number of years that that person spent or was granted permanent residence. The issue here, what we need to look at is that we are not deciding, the status of a person is not decided by the mere presence in the country. And as the provision itself already says, when you apply for permanent residence, you should have been in the country as a refugee for that period of residence. But by the time you had applied, you were not yet a refugee, but an asylum seeker. So we would like to stick to our arguments as we even outlined last week. Then going to the last proposal, Chair, that talks about the scraping of the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs. We should believe that this has been adequately dealt with in between 2006 to 2008, when the Amendment Act of 2008 was finalized. Because the proposal, we had made our own proposals in regard to the manifestly and unfounded, but Parliament itself had said we need to keep the process separate and agreed on the scraping of the Standing Committee for Refugee Affairs. So we do not see any need to revise or to review the decision that Parliament has already taken in 2008. Thank you. I think my colleagues will add where I might have left some bit of explanation. Thank you.
Please, Lovell, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I just want to add on clause 2B.
The retaining or the proposal is to retain the wording in the 2008 Act, which says he has committed a serious non-political crime. The issue here, or the problem rather, is the wording. One person would ask, what is a serious non-political crime? So I would say the intention for this amendment is to clarify that, to say, is to explain what is a non-political crime. And then I also want to go to the motivation that is stated on the other part, which says it is not aligned with international convention. Indeed, the international convention, it is stated that a person must have committed a serious non-political crime outside the country of origin. But what I want to say here is the amendment bill is not deviated from the convention. What is stated here, the problem, or the issue rather, is the wording or the terminology. The terminology used in the convention is different from the amendment bill, but the essence, the meaning is still the same. Because we're saying if you have committed a crime which is not of a political nature, and if it were to be committed in the Republic, it would be punishable by imprisonment without the option of a fine. So basically what we're trying to say here is to clarify what is a serious non-political crime, because that was the problem in the interpretation of this section and also the implementation of it in practice. So the purpose for the amendment was rather to clarify that. That is why we have this amendment. Basically, it still means the same. It conveys the same meaning as currently provided in the Act.
Thank you, Speaker. I'm not sure if the department would like to add or subtract. Over to you, DG.
So we have covered all of our points.
Honorable Lovemore, do you maybe have something to say?
Not very much, Chair. I'm obviously disappointed. I believe the submissions that these were extracted from were made in the best interest of human rights protection. That's it, bottom line. And I'm not convinced that same bottom line has been applied in the department's response. But I understand that we will go to the vote, and this will then go to the House. So I don't see much point in arguing each specific clause. Thank you, Chair.
Advocate Jenkins.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable members, good morning. Just a short point. You know, I've got the knack of speaking too much about refugees. Just the issue of the automatic review and the response given by the department. Just want to comment on it, not make a suggestion. I mean, the response from the department seems to indicate that you still have the option of a judicial review, which means going to court, which is correct. So there's not an issue of constitutionality really there. That cannot be excluded, we know that. But there's a monetary issue involved there, as well as a time issue. Because the first thing that an applicant will do is, of course, to interdict the department from deporting that person or to even incarcerating that person at Lindela or wherever. So that person will then be, at the one hand, manifestly unfounded, but on the other hand, free to move around, waiting for a court case to play itself out, which, depending on which division it is, can take a few years or a few months. So it's an issue that's there. Of course, it's a budget for the department that will have to defend those cases. And there's quite a lot of precedent of various non-profits and other organizations that have taken up the cause of refugees. And why I'm saying this, ma'am, is not to stir. I know we want to finalize this, but we heard at the beginning of considering this bill that because of the Zimbabwean situation, we were the biggest recipient of refugee applicants, asylum seekers, last year. So this issue can balloon beyond what we can imagine at this point, unless something is, of course, done about that situation. Because, I mean, we received something like 200,000 asylum applications last year. So it could become a major problem, and I think one needs to apply one's mind to it to make sure that we're not making more problems than when we want to actually have solutions to the issue. And I would agree. I mean, a manifestly unfounded person who doesn't fit within the act, you cannot deal with that person within the act. The person must be dealt with outside. But the law is a funny thing sometimes. It can take very long to actually reach that objective. Thank you, ma'am, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Advocate. Honorable Tibedi.
Well, thank you, Chair. I just want to say, I think as a committee we have to accept that the discussions that we had on this amendment bill, I think to some extent there has been some convergence on some issues. Of course there are disagreements on others, but I think the bottom line is we have a responsibility to put in place some mechanisms to deal with these kind of issues of refugees. And then my view is that even if we may not have agreed on each and everything, putting this thing into practice will give us an opportunity to begin to see some of the weak elements and move towards court. But for now, I think it will be difficult for us to make, you know, judgments which are very strong before we even put this thing into implementing. So what I'm saying therefore, Chair, I'm just appealing that let's agree that there has been some open discussions and certain views have been taken, some were not taken, and we move together in unison, and then as we move ahead, I think we can strengthen the system based on our experiences as we move forward. So that will be my plea. As we move forward.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Balimzela.
It is true that one learns until you get old. I think I really appreciate what Honourable Lovemore has brought our attention to. And I think I appreciate it because for whatever principle you learn, to know that you are sticking by the conventions, to know that you are part of the signatory that was in those conventions. It is very important, and I also very much appreciate the issue of always looking at the human rights side of it. We also, as COOP, discussed this, but briefly this morning, because we knew that we were going to come here. And some of the things that we appreciated mostly was that there has been a great effort from the department to really try and improve on all these amendments that we are seeking. And secondly, we also felt that we must support what is being done to improve the people who are really clamoring, and I don't think they can wait for a long time. So we have two very important things to do now. One day we must still go back and discuss at length, but for now it's enough for us, and COOP feels that we must now move further. And we do accept that there are many other loose things that we still, but let us now move. We have shown here, all of us, that we are aware that what we are now dealing with is quite very substantial. So I appreciate what Honorable Lovemore brought, but I feel, and we do feel as COOP, that we must move forward, and therefore I am also seconding the proposal that let us accept this with all those shortcomings, if there are.
Thank you, Honorable Member. Your mic is still on. And I would like to... Oh, you want to say something again?
Yes. There was just one thing I wanted to find out on clause 9. Honorable Lovemore said the explanation that was given by the minister is a different explanation from what we got from the department. If I could just have that clarified, does it still hold as explained by Honorable Lovemore?
Honorable Lovemore, can you assist us there?
Yes, Chair, that didn't apply to the Refugees Amendment Bill. That referred to the Citizenship Amendment Bill, and particularly the engagement in a war and people losing their citizenship as a result.
Oh, Mapalindlela, it's an amendment, that one that deals with the naturalized people, where she states she's going to make a declaration, which is the right to do that in the House. We are now going to deal with the Refugees Amendment Bill, and we would like to, in this instance, as the state law advisor to help us. Yeah, to go clause by clause wherever there are changes that were made, that were made as a protocol. Yeah, the proposed amendment by the portfolio committee.
Thanks, Chairperson. Amendments which are proposed by the portfolio committee during our, which are being proposed now actually, is on clause 1. It is on page 2 in line 12.
It's the two pager, am I right?
Yeah, it's a two pager document. The A list is B30A 2010. The amendment is to remove the word facial patterns from the Act. So the amendment reads on page 2 in line 12 and 13 to omit facial patterns, and which is written in, it's not bolded, and to substitute in bold is comma facial patterns, and so the intention is to remove those words from the Act, from the Principal Act. In clause 2,
2, it's on page 3 in line 25. After the words imprisonment, it's to insert without the option of the fine, as was proposed by the committee chapter. The next one's in clause 4. Clause 4 is page 3 in line 38. We are omitting the entire paragraph F as it stands there, because currently in clause 4 it says on section 8 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for, by the deletion of paragraph F. So we are amending that clause 4 by deletion. The amendment now is going to read on page 3 in line 38 to omit facial patterns. Sorry to omit, that's a mistake here, Chairperson, because this is, I think we're supposed to reject clause 4, because the clause 4 we're having in front of us, it says, is hereby amended by the deletion of paragraph F. So what we're coming with now in the committee is not to delete paragraph F. We're actually amending section 8E in order to substitute paragraph F. But in the BB, you will see it has been done correctly. But here it's supposed to reject clause 4, because current clause 4 is saying the opposite. It's supposed to reject the current clause 4, and it's supposed to come to propose amendment to section 8A. So I'm going to read the amendment which are supposed to be proposed to section 8E of the Principal Act. The amendment should read, Section 8, the heading will be amendment of Section 8E of the Act from the Act, is correct, the heading there. And then clause 4 should read, Section 8E of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in paragraph F of the following paragraph. Is a political office bearer holding a position in the National Executive Committee of any political party. That's the new amendment which I propose to Section 8E of the Act. The next amendment is in clause 6, page 4, in line 8. To omit paragraph B, the entire paragraph B, it is being omitted from the amendment. That was the one that was deleting subsection 2B, paragraph B. So there's no amendment in that section. Hence, we are deleting paragraph B. There are no amendment to that section. The next one is in clause 8, on page 5, in line 6. It's the same thing there. We're omitting paragraph C, because there's also no amendment to we're not deleting subsection 3A. So the purpose here for the amendment is to omit the entire paragraph C from the amendment B. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, State Law Advisor. Let me take you back to clause 4, where we deal with a political office bearer. Are we all together, honorable members? If I remember, I think this was a typographical error, because we said it should be executive structure of any political party, should not be executive committee, because other political committees don't have, I mean, all other political parties don't have an executive committees. Others have a council, like Honorable Makuba, what do you have in the IFP? What is your national executive? Or you do have it. But there are others that don't have NEC, like, others have National Executive Committee, others have Yes, National Council, yeah. So if we put it as a national society, I'm not sure, Honorable, yeah, Lycop, I'm not sure if the DA has, Honorable Lovemore.
Ours is called the Federal Executive Committee, but I personally am happy with this because even though we call it the Federal Executive Committee, it is our national executive structure.
That's fine.
So I was quite happy with it.
Fine. Okay. Honorable Tibedi?
Yes, I think, Chair, we said national executive structure. We removed the word committee because we wanted to accommodate those that are having, for example, your central committees, your whatever. So a national structure is fine, as far as I remember.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Okay, Honourable Lasmo.
I'm sorry, Chair. I must say that I got lost for the last two amendments. We do have the BBO in front of us. But the last two amendments that were gone through, I got lost. Would it be possible just to go through them again quickly, please?
What you state, Lord Bazaar? Just to take the member along with the last two clauses.
The last two clauses, Shepherd, is clause 6 and clause 8. They're the ones that are deleting paragraph B and paragraph C from the amendment bill. I'm not sure if the member got it now.
Of love, my kingdom. Okay. Are we all together, Honourable Members? Because now we are going to vote on the bill page by page or line, clause by clause. We are going to vote on the bill, on the B30-2010 bill. Do we all have it in front of us? B30-2010. Are you okay?
I'm sorry, Chair, but please can you just explain to me, on, well, with these amendments, on page 4, in clause 6, line 8, we're saying we're deleting paragraph B, omitting paragraph B in the amendment, which means that we then go back to paragraph B, the words preceding paragraph A in the original act. And the words preceding paragraph A in the original act are refugee status determination officer. So I don't understand why we are now deleting paragraph B, and the same thing with page 5. I might be having a blonde moment, but yeah.
What was proposed last time, and it was also made by the on public submission, was why are we deleting paragraph B, which was saying the UHI must consult with the people who are making the people who are making the decision here, they may consult. I'm going to refer through to the relevant sections in the Act, Chairperson. It's section 24 of the Principal Act as amended in the 2008 so that the member there can understand correctly. It's section 24. Section 24 of the Principal Act, subsection 2, is the one that says when considering an application for asylum, the refuge status determination officer must, then I'm going to read paragraph B, may consult with or invite a UNHCR representative to furnish information on special matters. Now, what the amendment bill was doing, it was omitting that paragraph B from the Act, which means that when they were considering an application for asylum, they don't necessarily need to consult a UNHCR. So the question that was raised was, why are you deleting the reference there? Because it's very important for the officer there to be consultant before they make a decision. So that's the reason why the amendment has been made now to delete that paragraph B, which was deleting the entire paragraph B from the Act, from the Principal Act. And that's basically the same thing with regard to Clause 8. I'm not sure if that is clear enough.
Chair,
yeah,
I please forgive me. 24.1b of the original Act, 24.1b, deals with the UNHCR, and C for that matter, deals with the UNHCR representative. Okay. Now, with the amendments that are being read out, we have got amendments in 24.2, 24.3, 24.4, and 24.5. But we don't have amendments to 24.1.
Let's look at the 2008 Amendment Act, not the 1998 Act. 2008 Amendment Act. That's where we're making amendments to.
Advocate Erasmus.
Chairperson, thank you very much. If one looks at Clause 17, well, it's actually Section 17 of the 2008 Amendment. It deals with the amendments that were affected to Section 24 of the Principal Act. And in there, paragraph B indicates the substitution for subsections 2, 3, and 4 of the following subsections. And in subsection 2, then it indicates when considering an application for asylum, the refugee status determination officer, and if you go to B there, may consult with or invite a UNHCR representative to furnish information on specified matters. So this is why we need to bring that in, just reading this in tangent with the 2008 amendments. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you,
Chief Law Advisor, are you with us that we are bringing it in? Is that what it is? Okay. All right. Now we are voting on B 2010B. On the first page, we are in agreement with the removal of facial pattern. Okay. We are going to need a mover and a seconder for each clause. Thank you. So, Zwan, yeah. Thank you, Honorable Makuba. So, Zwan. Clause 2. Removing the status determination officer for status determination committee. Are we together, honourable members? Honourable Tibedi, moving. Can we have a second for clause 2? Honourable Palindela. Section 3. Clause 3. Honourable Lovemore. I see 4. Four is the deletion of a paragraph. No. Okay, no. It's according to this. Clause 4, Honourable Tibedi moves, Honourable Palindela second. Clause 5, all is amended, no? Yes, sorry, I forgot to mention that. Clause 5, Honourable Peterson Madonna moves. Honourable Makuga second. Clause 6 with amendments. Honourable Lovemore. Honourable Tibedi moving. Can we have a second? Honorable Makuba. Clause 7. Honorable Lovemore, move. Seconded by Honorable Palindela. Clause 8. Honorable Lovemore, Honorable Martina Peterson. Clause 9. Honorable Palindela. Honorable Martina. Clause 10. Honorable Palindela. Honorable Hasibuni. Clause 11. Honorable Tibedi. Found it? Yes. Seconda. Honorable Martinez. Clause 12. Clause 13. Oh, that's a short item. Thank you, honorable member. The secretary will read the report on our behalf.
Report.
author of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs on the Refugee Amendment Bill, National Assembly Section 75, dated 16 November 2010. The Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, having considered the subject of the Refugee Amendment Bill, B-80-2010, National Assembly Section 25, referred to it, reports the bill with Amendment A.
That's in order, Honourable Member. Thank you, Chief.
Can you just guide me, not having had to do this before, in terms of raising objections, can the objections of the Democratic Alliance to those specific clauses that I submitted to the committee secretariat where we had problems, can those objections be officially noted?
They will be noted, Honourable Member. Honourable Members, we've done the A and the B Amendment Bill. So we won't be coming back to go through as to whether everything was included in the bill that is going to be finalized. I'm sure we will be getting copies and then we can go through them, but I think everything will be included in the other bill that is going to be printed. And on that note, Honourable Members, I would like to thank you and thank every... You, I'm not closing you. It's immigration. No, I thought you were closing. I thought you were closing. Honourable Members, the last item is the Immigration Amendment Bill. We are dealing with... I think we should have just... a smoker's break for people to, you know, because this has been a long wait, and they come back after 5 minutes for the Immigration Amendment Bill. Thank you.
sort of cool and hope
that... Good, good, good.
How long are you going to be here? How long? No, I mean, in general. Head down, working.
3 months.
End of January. That's
Melbourne.
No,
I'm
going to Europe.
How about
that? Okay. Where are you going to go? India?
No.
Yeah, oh, anyway. Cross. Window dressing. expensive window dressing. Double standard.
Yeah, it
has
so much.
Yeah, it does. For their own, exactly. Not cynical enough yet. Optimistic.
I'm very optimistic.
Not innocent. An Australian thing. Being not innocent. Joking. Really?
Apparently they're around.
They are around, but they're rare. It's not like English people, lots of them. German, yeah. They've taken to this country. The Australians are rare. Scotty. Must be the
first. 20 minutes has long passed. Can we take our seats and continue with our business?
More or less, yeah.
We are now dealing with the Immigration Amendment Bill. The department will lead us
here today, and the background in terms of the context on which we are operating as a department. What are the problem statements which we have as a department with regard to these amendments? What are the high-level overview of the amendments? And then after that, we'll go to clause by clause of the amendments which are proposed. Chair, the department is to brief the portfolio committee with regard to the proposed amendments to the Immigration Act of 2002, Act Number 13 of 2002, the Act, as a result of challenges experienced by the department in the implementation of this Act. Chair, South Africa is part of a global village and manages movement of people who travel for purposes of investing their financial resources in the economy, contributing to social and cultural development, investing their skills and experience in order to promote economic growth, promoting tourism, and facilitating academic exchanges within SADC. So what are the problems which are faced by the department or challenges? The Act provides for the change of status and conditions attached to a permit, and this leads to foreigners entering the Republic under false pretense. For example, foreigners enter as tourists instead of their true intentions. So, Chair, when I come back, when I deal with the amendments, to say, what are we doing with that problem and what does that problem mean? The use of the term permit for certain types of temporary residence permits create a perception on the recipient of the status of a permit vis-a-vis a visa. Permits are generally in other countries for longer stays and visas for shorter stay. I'm going to come back to it, Chair, when I deal in detail in terms of the amendments. Lack of provisions in the Act which enables the department to assist in the combating of child and human trafficking. In the last debate, we talked about the issue of registering the children within 30 days. This, we're going to come back to it. The current provisions relating to offenses no longer serves as a deterrent. In this, Chair, when I come to, again, I'll come back to it in terms of people who come to our country and have an overstay, and they leave the country and hope that one day they will come back, so it's no longer a deterrent. But I'll come back to it. Poor management of risks associated with the adequate screening of foreign nationals who seek to enter South Africa. I will combine this with the next one. Inadequate integrated security verification processes and lack of interaction with clients. Chair, currently we've got processes whereby we don't interact directly with the clients. We interact through some structures, whether it's lawyers or practitioners, which meant that, Chair, as a department, we're not able to interact directly with the people. And also with the processes which we're implementing across the department in terms of moving into biometrics, we're moving to check iris, we move to check fingerprints, so that we make sure as a department that this is the person whom we are dealing with. We are not giving a permit to somebody else. So now as a department, we are moving in that process to improve security in the department, which I think it is a well-known fact that the Department of Home Affairs has got a huge challenges around issues of corruption and fraud. So what can we do as a department to try and eliminate that with a view of combating it? But another issue which we are looking at, which I've mentioned, is the issue now of how can we rationalize these issues of visas and permits to make them more understandable. Let's go to that. Chair, firstly, with the visas types, we're really looking at rationalizing now these visas. The first one is a visitor's visa. In the Act, it was a permit, so we're saying that it must be a visa. But we're splitting it in two categories. That a category A will be a visit not exceeding 3 months, however extendable by further period not exceeding 3 months. So in total, it will be 6 months. So purpose of holiday visits, medical treatment. So, Jack, do we have this in the... Or isn't there... Or members have made copies? Or it's just listed as as a copy to me somewhere. Oh, there are copies.
We don't have enough copies, honorable members, so we'll have to share.
There's another one. Okay. Thanks, I'm sure we those of these hyperlinks now the document didn't print that one. So then we're saying now then the business visits, attending conferences in the country, entertainers coming for social development, and issues of a study purpose. That study purpose doesn't mean the one where you register for 4 years to study. It means that I come to the country for 3 weeks or 2 months visiting a particular institution. So that will be not exceeding 3 months. Then the category B is visits for any period which may not exceed 3 years, but is for academic sabbaticals, voluntary or charitable activities, and research. So now then the visitor's permit will be covering that. And then we also changed, as I indicated, Chair, that now we're having a lot of issues under permits. So now we're grouping them as visas. So now we'll have a study visa instead of a study permit. In terms of all the processes is still the same, is up to the 4 years. Treaty visa, then we'll have business visas, and then we'll have crew visa, medical treatment visa, and retired persons visa, and exchange visa. But in terms of what is in the Act, Chair, is still the same, but there will be changes here and there because of the issues as we highlighted, which we'll deal with it. Then I'm going to show you now which ones were also now. Then in terms of permits, we still have a relatives permit, we still have a general work permit, critical skills work permit is a new one because of the rationalization which we have done, intra-company transfer work permit, corporate permit, and asylum transit permit. And the following permits are proposed to be deleted from the Act is a quota work permit and exceptional skills work permit. Because I'm saying, Chair, those will be managed now under the new one, which is the critical skills work permit. Then, Chair, with the cross-border and transit permit, what that permit meant was that the holder of that permit was not presenting himself or herself to the the immigration officer. They were just given that they can cross anywhere in the borderline. With the issues chair of security was saying that board, that permit is really poses more risk to the department than anything. However, the transit visa is still remaining to say if now we are coming from another country, we have to go from South Africa to the neighboring countries, then you go through that transit visa. Then, at a high level, what are these amendments which were really bringing? The main objective of the bill is to delete certain wording of the preamble to the Act, substitute and insert or delete certain definitions, which are going to come to them, provide for the definition of ports of entry, revise the provision relating to the immigration advisory board, revise provision relating to the making of regulations, revised provisions relating to visas for temporary sojourn in the Republic and related procedures, provide for the mandatory transmission and use of information and on advanced passenger processing. I'm going to come into detail to that. Provide for transmission of passenger name record information, revised provisions relating to permanent residence to revise penal provisions, repeal provisions relating to immigration practitioners. I'm going to come back to that, check. Well, going now, check clause by clause. Clause 1 amends paragraph C of the Bill to the Act in order to substitute the words functions of immigration control for the words management of immigration. Chair, we are saying we cannot control immigration. As we said now, as a country, we are the part of the global of village. However, what we are looking at is the management of immigration. So we want to change that wording. This is to ensure that the correct terminology is used as the context is of management of immigration rather than control thereof. Clause 2. Amendment clause to substitute, insert, and delete certain definitions in the principal act, such as the following. As the chair said, I want to come back to this. We are now coming up with an advanced passenger processing system. This is a new definition relating to mandatory compliance for electronic submission of passenger information before boarding passengers to the APP system. So you will recall that during the FIFA 2010 World Cup, for us to secure the country, we had to make sure that people, before they board in those countries of origin, let's check them whilst they are there, rather than letting them come to our country, and after that we create huge problems for ourselves. But now that system is able now for us to stop undesirable people before they leave their country of origin. And if that airliner now boards that person once has been notified, when he comes to our ports of entry, has to return with that person at the cost of the airliner. So that's what we are including now in our system to really protect the country. Also, other issue, Chair, is the immigration officer. Currently, immigration officer is defined to mean only persons appointed in terms of Section 33, and this tends to create the impression that other officials in the permitting regime are not immigration officers. Again, Chair, we have learned based on the big event which we had to say we need to have our employees which can be rotated on any area. Because if now I arrest somebody, but I'm not an immigration officer, then that can be a challenge. So we're saying in the department, anybody who is in that, we must be regarded as immigration officer. And now we are going towards a festive season. Our ports of entry need support. So if now we're going to be in a certain group, then we're not able to deliver that service delivery, but that will allow us to do that. And then, Chair, in terms of marriage, as we know now that we've got a new definition or categories of marriage, so now we're amending to include other types of marriages, including the civil union. Chair, again, this is really also in regard to this protection which we're talking about. Because there's always a question such to say, yes, our systems are able to tell us how many people have come in a particular port of entry, but where are those people and all that. So this now is a new definition relating to the mandatory submission of passenger name record information. So what this thing means now, Chair, is that we really now in our system to know where people are. So that even with these issues of overstays, because we'll remember now when we're asked how many refugees do we have in the country, we don't have that record. How many people have come in, where are they in the country? But this is going to assist now the department to get that information. Clause 3, Amendment Section 4 of the Act, Section 42 of the Act lists the departments that must constitute the Immigration Advisory Board. Clause 3, Amendment Section 4 of the Act, in order to remove the specification of departments and to provide that such department or organs of state will be those that the minister considers as relevant. At the moment, we list as an example, we've got now Department of Foreign Affairs, which is no longer now Foreign Affairs, is DICO, because now we have named them in the Act. So I say we should remove that. We only said what would be the relevant department, and the minister would say we must participate in the board. Section 7 of the Act is amended in order to effect consensual amendments regarding the change of categorization of certain permits to visas, as well as to make provision for the charging of fees for advanced passenger processing and passenger name record transmission. Chair, what we are looking at on the issue of the advanced passenger processing system is that we have to pay a certain amount to do that checking through a company now at the stage called Vita. So we are saying we need now to make a provision that that amount has to be passed on to the traveler, because now when that traveler comes to the country, and we're able to charge a certain fees on processing that information. The current section prescribed for the making of regulations regarding terms and conditions pertaining to immigration practitioners. This is a causal amendment as the provision related to immigration practitioner is repealed. So I want to emphasize this so it can be understood when I come back to it. So we are not saying practitioners must not operate in the country. That's not what the department is saying. We are simply saying they must not be in the Act, because by bringing them in the Act, we do not have a total control as a department to manage the practitioners. And also we are saying, if as an individual, I still have my choice to go and get to the practitioners to assist me in preparing my document or whatever. But as a department, at the end, we want to deal with that particular individual who is applying for the permit. And Chair, we also understand that we do not have the same level of the people who are coming to apply into our country. We've got big businesses and all those categories. In order for us to deal with this, we are also creating certain structures in the department, which those structures, like one, would be a large account unit, which would be specifically to deal with the big businesses so that they're able to come and apply and frustrate their processes through that. But the issue, the Chair, is the one which I tried to explain as well, to say we want to tighten our verification process. What we want to do, so that these problems which are reported on paper, that we've got companies who brings people on this and come as that, so those things will be avoided now, because we are dealing with individuals and we're able to check, and we've got that capability as a department. Current Section 93A of the Act provides that no person may be admitted into the Republic if not in possession of passport, except where such a person is a child under the age of 16 years, accompanied by his or her parent who holds a passport in which his or her name was entered. So the risk with that, human trafficking, because now children, they are not needed to be in a passport, they are just coming to our border like that. So what we are recommending now is to say that clause 6 amend 9A of the Act in order to make it a requirement that a child must possess his or her own passport, so that now we know that this child belongs to the parents who are moving, or that is not, but is a child who is registered, so that we really work on this issue of child trafficking. The definition of a port of entry empowers the minister to designate a place of entry or exit which does not prescribe the requirements for such designation. In such section 9A in the Act, in order to empower the minister to designate in the prescribed manner any place which complies with the prescribed requirements as a place of entry or exit, the minister is also empowered to withdraw any such designation. So what we're looking at here is that for us to open a port of entry, it must be based on a particular criteria, because at the end of the day, currently, we've got ports of entry where there's only a police, no immigration officers there, no customs, and for very for money, and the issue of controlling our borders. Because if there is one person in a border post, you can imagine what are the possibilities which can happen there in terms of all these fraud challenges which we have. So now we're saying the minister must have a criteria and look at what must be a border post, and must also have the power to say this one is no longer relevant because of this criteria, whereas this one it is. Section 10.2 of the Act makes provision for a foreigner to apply one of the temporary residence permits contemplated in Section 11 to 23 of the Act. Subsection 6 allows a foreigner to change his or her status whilst in the Republic. That is one of the major problems which we have. That's why we're saying people come into the country under a visitor's permit. Once that person is inside the country, change that permit, that status, and coming to get a work permit, and check there are processes of how one gets a work permit, which now is difficult because this person is already in the country. But if that person is still not coming to the country, decisions take properly, and the person is there, not a burden into our own country, which results on these appeals which we're talking about. That now person now comes on this permit, you don't grant this, then gets into the and these appeals, clogging the system and end up with people in our country for 3 years. Based on this appeal. So we're saying as a department, people must apply for their permits in their country of origin. Well, we know that there will be an exceptional circumstances. Then in that instance, we're saying it only be the minister who look at that exceptional circumstance and be able now to grant that permit. But people must apply for their permits at their country of origin. And Chair, as was indicated already, that the following permits will be now called visas. I've dealt with that. Then clause 8, amend section 10.2 of the Act in order to effect consensual amendments with the following change of the setting permits from definition of permits to visa, which I've already covered. Section 15 of the Act does not prescribe the kind of business that foreigner intends to establish or invest. That is another sore point. Then this amends Section 58 in order to make provision for the issuing of a business visa to a foreigner who intends to establish or invest in a business that is prescribed to be in the national interest. So problems which we are sitting with as a department, we've got a responsibility. Yes, we understand that we need to grow our economy. And our economy also depends on a foreign direct investment. However, we have to promote the economy locally. We have to protect the South African citizens in terms of them having a chance also to participate in this economy. Now, Chair, if now we don't have what type of business which are of national interest, now I'm making an example. Maybe now for us, we get a company wants to come in an industry, in the industry like of the hotels as an example. Now we need to be able to say, is that at the moment of national interest, or what is of national interest is the infrastructure, building of roads and all that. So then we're able, together with DTI, to say the country is now interested on this type of business. Therefore, that's where we need to go and attract, rather than getting something which is already in the country, which is not of national interest. So that's what we mean by that clause. Section 19(1) of the Act provides for the issuing of quota work permit. Repeal section of the Act, the quotas published for quota work permit are similar in certain respect to those issued with an exception skills work permit. Therefore, the proposal is to create one permit called critical skills permit. So it is what we're saying now, that we want to combine that permit that, so that now at the moment we'll be able to say in a particular company we need to have a quota to say foreigners must be this percentage, and then the locals must be this percentage. So I say the issue must not be the numbers, must be, is this a critical skill which we need in the country? So that's what now I say, want to look at the quota and come up with the exceptional critical skills which are needed in the country. This clause further revises the provision of Section 19(2) of the Act. Furthermore, clause deletes Section 9(2) of the Act. The requirements for issuing of a general work permit will be prescribed in the regulation. So that's what we'll be doing with that. Furthermore, this clause substitutes Section 19(5) of the Act in order to move the requirements for the issuing of an intra-company transfer work permit to regulations. The intra-company transfer work permit will be issued for 4 years once the Immigration Act 2000 is brought into operation. So as I was saying, so this, instead of it being in the Act, it can be just dealt with in the regulation, because it's just an intra-transfer of the permit within the company. Section 21(1) of the Act does not determine the sectors that qualifies to be issued with a corporate permit. Substitute Section 21 of the Act in order to make provision for the issuing of a corporate permit to a corporate applicant who conducts business in the sectors that are published in the Government Gazette from time to time. So, again, the danger of the corporate permit is the one it says, I apply as a corporate, and then I'm able to be granted the problem that I'm going to have 100 people, which I will be part of this corporate permit. And then the management of that is causing a problem in the department, because people get that and they change people within that process. And we're saying the Department of Labor should be able to say, again on these skills we're talking about, to say what are the skills which are short in the country. Like if we're short of welders, they must be able to say to us, yes, welders, you can get a corporate permit to bring in welders, but not some of the skills which are not needed in the country. So that's why then I was saying those skills must be deserted, and then the department will be guided by those skills which are needed by the Department of Labor. Section 21.5 provides that the holder of a corporate permit may also employ persons in terms of Section 19. Section 21.5 is being repealed. This provision creates interpretation problems, and there's already judgment here that purports that the said permit is another permit. New provision is made that a person employed in terms of a corporate permit shall only work for the holder of that corporate permit. You don't come into our country under this permit. Once you are inside here, you leave that, you go and work somewhere, and you say, no, I'm under that corporate permit, which brings back what we are saying, to apply for your permit at your country of origin. Delete Section 22B of the Act that dealt with an exchange permit for persons under the age of 25 years of age who has received an offer to conduct work for no longer than 1 year. This permit is mostly used to employ foreigners to do work that does not correlate with the principles of an exchange program. So the amendment, so we'll not go back here. Yeah. So what we're saying there is that this was really abused because it had that bracket, and then people come through that is under age 25, and therefore can get. So it doesn't now allow us go back to what we're saying, that if we want to create a permit for a business or for a skill, we need to know what skills we are looking at as a country. So we're just closing that the loopholes which we're sitting with it now. Section 23(1) of the Act provides for the issuing of an asylum transit permit valid for 14 days. Amend the validity period to 5 days for the reporting to the nearest refugee reception office, and further provides for a procedure for establishing whether or not such a person qualifies for making application for asylum. Actually, this is linking with the refugee amendment bill, where we're saying this 14 days is really creating a problem for the department, because people come through our ports of entry, and they just, as we explained in the refugee, that you lose a lot of people between coming into a port of entry, because within that 14 days they must appear in front of our refugee reception officers. Then they get lost because this period is too long, and then they end up going far into our country. So we want to really limit this period so that people must know their priority is to go and apply for an asylum seeker. It's not to be in the country with that kind of a temporal permit. Section 24 of the Act provides for the issue of a cross-border and transit permit to specified foreigners. So what I've already talked about, repeal of this section of the Act. There are certain sectors that emanate from requirements that holders of cross-border permits may not report to an immigration officer. So let's take that out. People must go through an immigration officer. Section 26 does not prescribe the requirements for the issuing of a permanent residence permit. Amend Section 26 of the Act in order to make provision for prescribing requirements for the issuing of a permanent residence permit. So I think, Chair, we need now to be clear in the regulations to say these are the criteria for us to be issuing the permanent residence permit, so there are no misinterpretations. Section 27 of the Act does not provide for prison for issue. I think that is a duplication. Oh, two sections. Yeah, Act provides for Section 27A. That one was another section. Okay, let's move. Section 27 of the Act does not prescribe that a business which a foreigner intends to establish or has established in the Republic must be prescribed in the national interest, as I've explained on the other one. This calls for the substitute of the Act in order to provide that it's the same thing. Section 29(1) does not include the crimes of human smuggling and trafficking in person as part of list of crimes that may result in the listing of a person as a prohibited person. So we really want to substitute Section 91 in order to insert the crimes of human smuggling and trafficking in person on the list. Clause 20 provides as a constitutional amendment to Section 50.1 for the declaration of persons who overstayed in the Republic for a prescribed number of times as undesirable. Current such persons are fined a prescribed amount, and that is no longer deterrent enough. Chair, this has been a problem in the department now on the finance side as well. To say when a person is given a fine, on our border, we can't say that person must not leave. So now this individual leaves with a fine, and then it sits in our books as something which we can collect. We will only be lucky if that person comes back. If he does not come back, that amount sits there for years. The other one, check, that person comes back and pay that fine, which is the same amount. Whether is your first time, is your second time, is your third time, you just paid that fine. So people are just abusing that. So we're saying it is no longer a deterrent. What we want now is to prescribe that person as undesirable in the country. So now we delist those individuals if now you come for the first time, we'll look at that and say what was the issue. Second, third, you can no longer come into our country. So that's what we're proposing on that. The section of the Act amended in order to insert new provision for advanced passenger processing is what we already explained, but it's another section. 24th, the Act in order to set concernment regarding the change of certain permits, we've already dealt with that. And also clause 23 is the one we've talked about of immigration practitioners. And then section 49, the penalties for offence listed there are no longer deterrent enough, as I said. Amend section 49 of the in order to increase penalties and provide for imprisonment without option of a fine in cases of e.g. crimes involving public service. What we're saying is that if now, as an official of Home Affairs, because one of the problems which we're having even on the IDs is what we're saying, we can't have an identity theft when an identity will regard it as an asset of the state. I'm old as a get caught and then I get 1,500 or 3 months. It just makes no sense. So we are saying now with this, if I get caught facilitating a process, whether it's of a visa or of somebody through our ports of entry, I must get, that must be tight so that people can know that this is a no-go area. Section 24 for imposition of administration fines is the one which I have talked about, which then I want to get out of here. Chair, as we did explain in the previous encounter, to say, yes, these are just the amendments which now you are just dealing with them in order for us to really manage immigration in an efficient way, but we'll still be coming with the bigger changes in the immigration policy of the country. So now we're just dealing with the amendments in the current act. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG. For the amendments to the immigration bill, but you don't know you made my day today, especially with the amendments of Section 49, imprisonment without a fine to officials. I wish you do that also too, with the death and, you know, our national documents, because that is very important. Our documents are just, you know, being sold like set cakes. So if we have a law like this, I'm sure this will make officials think twice before they do wrong. Honorable members, it's time for questions for clarity and comments. Honorable Lovemore.
Thank you, Chair. And again, I need your guidance. I know that we will go into, and I presume it will be next year, public hearings and deliberations. So I presume that we'll do the detailed clause by clause at that stage. I have just a couple of questions of clarity. The DG refers to a migration policy. The Deputy Minister, as far as I'm aware, is in Windhoek at the moment, attending a static migration policy workshop. To the best of my knowledge, we don't have a migration policy. I don't know when it will be coming, but in light of the fact that we do not have in South Africa a migration policy, why has it been necessary to bring such far-reaching legislation to Parliament? I certainly understand, Chair, the DG's explanations where we have, for instance, human trafficking is a problem, and we all accept that, and we realize we need to deal with it. But some of the changes that are being made are far-reaching, could have really enormous consequences, major consequences for the economy, not just for individuals. And as I say, in the absence of a migration policy, what urgent matters have needed to be addressed in the current system, apart from those pointed out? Chair, I have a great concern, and I think it would be good, as I say, I know we'll go into detail later, but
this Act is going to require, let me go back one step. Currently we have a quota permit. Now, the quota is gazetted, or should be gazetted every year. The quotas should be gazetted every year. They haven't been gazetted in 2010, Chair. The 2009 list is exactly the same as the 2008 list, with a difference of the number of teachers. Neither of those lists even contains doctors and nurses as people we need in this country. So the level of research, I don't know if we have the capacity to undertake the level of research that is required. Now, that's going to be done away with, that quota skills, as is exceptional skills. And we're going to have a number of other lists. We're going to need two separate lists here, Chair. We're going to need a list of businesses that are prescribed to be in the national interest. We're going to need a list of skills or qualifications that are determined to be critical. And we're going to need a list of sectors. This is in terms of the corporate permits now. We're going to need a list of sectors that are published in the Government Gazette. So three separate lists. Currently we need one. It isn't maintained. So my question is, with the enormous changes that are proposed by this bill, is does this department have the capacity to implement, in fact, this bill? And if not, how does it intend to address that? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Ambrosini.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I've come here today being a member of the Committee on Trade and Industry because of the immense impact that this bill will have on trade and industry and the economy, and indeed the future of the country. I also come here because, rightly or wrongly, I've got 10 years of experience in this matter as the former advisor to the Minister of Home Affairs, under which the policy and the legislation was developed. 10 years, which exceed that more. I mean, it's a fact. Most of the people today in the department. You invited questions and comments. Just one comment. With your indulgence, Madam Chairman, I've read this bill and studied extensively, so it is clear to me what it does and what it tries to achieve. These are enormously profound, long-term, far-reaching amendments. There is nothing interim about this. There is nothing urgent about this. It is foundational, and I'm not going to go into the merits. I'm just stating that once you kill something like immigration practitioners, the type of permit, the structure which implements it, you don't put it back. So you need to, if this is an interim, you need to determine what it is on the other side. It is a policy without a policy. The legislation on the books now was the product of a 10-year policy development with a green paper, a white paper, a public hearings in all the provinces, two international conferences. During that process, it was clear that there are two views, two different views at odds. A departmental view, which was formed during apartheid, which is still in the building, even the building has changed, is still part of the mindset, which is we decide who comes in. And there is a societal view, which wishes to have objective, predictable, simple to administer objectives. I mean, criteria that people can come in and acquire permits as you would do with a driving license. Now, these are two views which emerge very clear. The purpose of legislation is to balance those views. This bill is the expression of what the department wants, needs, and wishes. It is not the expression of what the other view expresses as the view of society. The entire purpose of my intervention, Madam Chairman, is to plead with you to have as extensive public hearings as possible. Hear what the people outside the department say. Hear what the people with the real experience in this field say. Hear what the company says. What the clients, the customers of this function say, and what they want and what they need. Because we are there to serve them. And that for each foreigner who comes in, there is a South African employer employs it. There is a spouse. There are people who receive, there are friends, and those are our customers. So what I look at this, I said, I don't want to go into the merits, but it is a terrible bill. It is a bill which I don't think appreciates the consequences of society. Is it the reflection of a deranged bureaucratic mindset which goes all the way back to John Foster, and it is something that does not fit in a democratic advanced South Africa, and it would put back this country, as far as migration control is concerned, to 10 years. That's my view. I urge you to get all the views before you and make a determination with your own assessment, and possibly in coordination with the Department of Trade and Industry, as we have a very important stake in this matter. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ambrosini. Honorable Chibede.
Well, thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me appreciate the amendment on this immigration thing. You know, as the presentation was made, I actually got worried that it is clear that our borders, our port of entry, are not adequately guarded, for the lack of a better word. And as a result, this on its own makes this bill as important and urgent if we have to take ourselves serious as a sovereign country. We can't live in a country where everyone just get in and get out. We can't. So I believe that we must take advantage of this amendment and move towards ensuring that some of the things raised in the bill are realized. Let me also say, you know, in terms of the, for example, the APP, I think it's a very important innovation. And because it was put to test during the 2010 FIFA Soccer World Cup, and the report we're getting is that it worked well. So for me, it seems to me it's a plus on our side. These are things that we have to build on moving forward. The other point I want to make is on page 17 regarding the passenger name record. The passenger name record. And I think it's correct that when people come to our country, from the port of entry, there have to be thorough processes in terms of registration, in terms of knowing the movement of these persons, where they are, and so on and so forth. So I think this process, as proposed here, in my view, will solve a number of problems. I have a question relating the issue on page 22, that is about children having to possess passports. I just want to find out what's our definition of children in this regard. So children must carry passports. I don't have the luxury of having read the principal act to see if maybe there's a lot of detail there, but I'm just asking this question based on what is contained here in front of me. And then the other issue I want to comment on, Chair, is the issue around the port of entry. I think the amendment here says that, or the current talks about the definition of port of entry, which empowers the minister to designate the place of entry or exit. Now, the amendment says that the minister to designate
in a prescribed manner, any place which complies with prescribed requirements is a place of entry or exit. The minister is also empowered to withdraw any such designation. Now, I just want to find out whether, after designating a place as a port of entry, is there anywhere where, because we can designate without staffing properly or adequately, reasonably, for example. Because having port of entry which are not adequately staffed defeats the whole objective. So if it is not covered somewhere else in the body of this bill or the principal act, I would think that we any designation must be accompanied by suitably qualified warm bodies who can monitor either warm bodies as well as high technological equipment that can help to facilitate such. Then the other issue I want to raise is people who are intending to invest in our country. And I think it's true, we all need foreign direct investment. But it must be orderly. It must be orderly, it must address our own national issues. Because if we don't do so, we are going to end up allowing investments which will come in here and destroy local companies. So we must not do that. We must fashion it in such a way that it enhances what we already have. It does not destroy it. It brings skills, it creates jobs in areas where locally we may not be adequately ready to create jobs in those particular sectors. So I agree that this is a correct move. We know already what skills we need, what skills we don't have. I think there are statistics to that effect. They may not be adequate, but there are statistics to that effect. So I make an argument, therefore, that as a country, and in fact, I think the Department of Foreign Affairs should have done this thing a long time ago. We are 16 years in a democracy. We cannot afford to postpone some of these things any further. Now, I also want to submit here that, yes, I agree that we really have to go full swing on public hearing. But the public hearings that we have to go through must address the whole section of our society. Because these things affect people differently. So we must talk to people in the rural areas, people in the urban areas, in cities, and so on and so forth. And because the fundamental bill, the public hearing must also be fundamental in nature, so that we get the views, not only of those who have the means to communicate, but even those who are disadvantaged, they must be able to add their voices in this regard. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chibedi. Could I give to the department?
Thanks, Honorable Chair and the members. I think, Chair, on our opening statement, we're really saying the department has got challenges. And these challenges, we have to deal with them now, not tomorrow. But there is a process of going to the future. I think the minister is on record that in South Africa, yes, we've got a white paper on immigration, but we need to go back and look at this. They started to meet with the BUSA. They started to meet with the COSATU. We're in the process of canvassing the issue of immigration policy for this country. But at the moment, is not assisting us on doing anything. Instead, it's creating more problems for us. That's why now we are bringing these amendments we are talking about to say, which I support the issue that, yes, we want foreign investment, but it can't be at the detriment of our own people. It can't be. So that's why we have to look at all these areas to make sure that in the interim, what are we doing? One of the, as you know, that one of the outcomes of which the Department of Home Affairs participate on, outcome number 3, which says we want that South Africans must feel and are safe. All these things, it doesn't mean safe only on the issue of the security, because the security goes even the securing of the economy, that is the security which people they want to feel safe. So the issue of the list which you are talking about, I think they are really necessary, as we said. We can't, I mean, I don't want to go there and say what kind of skills which you are getting on these permits, which are really ridiculous in terms of what we are looking for as a country. We stay border on these issues, you are saying, money laundering, human trafficking, but all those things, they come under the cloud of saying, oh, South Africa needs skills, but what we are attracting, people are coming into our country with the aim of pushing the issues of crime. I think we have to deal with that. It can't be for tomorrow. It must be for now. So this a list, that's why now we're saying we need to go to the Department of Labor. Department of Labor has got the responsibility. They must deal with the issues of this list which we are talking about. Department of Trade and Industry, they have to come up with this list of what kind of business are of national interest. We must be guided by that. So the Department of Home Affairs is also participating with the Department of Higher Education together with the Department of Labor in this issue of the skills, where our target is to attract about 50,000 skilled people per annum. But again, it must be directed. Well, the issue that the amendments which we are bringing are still bureaucratic and still living in the past, I think we are really guided here by the policy of this government. So we cannot bring things which are going to take us to the back. I think we're about transformation. So these issues, and unfortunately, a transformation is not a really a nice thing. It depends on which side you are. So we are really saying, let's transform this country. These amendments are really for that. Yes, I think the issues of other comments, I think it's very, as we're saying, that we can't have our borderlines, which are really porous. That it doesn't help us, because again, we'll sit as a country, again with the issues of xenophobia, and we'll be able, as if we do not know where those things come from, because it's because our borders are really porous. When we say children, they need passport, we mean 0 to 18 years. From birth, that child must be able to go and get that passport. And then when we say, I think that is very important, in the regulations, we will really make sure that when the minister designates a port of entry, it must have a criteria first. What is a port of entry? With what element it must have? It must be supported with resources, because if it is not, it means nothing. So really, we will make sure that in the regulations that are really covered. I think that the issue that things must be orderly, we really, is what we're trying to do here, that we want things now to be really orderly and clear, so they must be focused. Thanks.
Thank you, DJ. Do you have any more comments, questions? It's not, because this is the first presentation by the department. Maybe members to flip over them, and then we meet next year on the same amendment bill. Honorable members, there will be, I'm sure, extension
extensive public hearing, like we always do. Everybody will be given a chance to air his or her views on the amendment bill, and we ensure that we cover every sector of the bill. Also, that this is the last meeting of our portfolio committee. We will meet in the coming year, but to also indicate that I'm sure we are going to have a debate on refugees amendment bill on Thursday, if all goes well. Yes, on the, yeah, I think we should have, so that we finish with the refugees. I mean the refugees. Can we agree on that on Thursday? Honourable members, if we could have a debate so that we finished with the refugees amendment bill, because we've voted on it, we've deliberated on it, so the next year when we start with immigration and other issues. How about that?
If it is on the program, Thursday is a difficult day because it is questions to the President on Thursday, and then it's farewell speeches. So it might be difficult to get it onto the program. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I remember that it's questions to the President. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but I will speak to the programming group and see if we could fit it in. If I can't, then I'll let you know in the house. Honourable members, this is our last meeting for the year. I'd like to wish everybody a good rest. Nice, what do you mean? What do they say? Merry Christmas? Mm. Hope that we're all going to be back safely next year with our families. We go and rest for those couple of weeks and be back next year.